I tell people I'm more courageous than I am confident. But once I stepped into grandma's house, the confidence of what I was doing changed. Because it's like now it clarified some things for me, because I was trying to make my process fit into my old business model. It was not doing that.
Welcome to the Head Smack Podcast, where we have candid conversations with misfits and mavericks, those not afraid to stand up and stand out, the dreamers and the doers, the ones who've stumbled, fumbled, and then soared. Here we delve into the inspiring journeys and pivotal aha moments that have shaped their worlds. And maybe through sharing their adventures, you'll get hit with a head smack that'll change your destiny. Hey everybody, welcome to the Head Smack Podcast. My name is Paul Pavolny, and I love having conversations with misfits. And I think one of the most recent misfits that I've come to know is the Ghetto Country Brandmother. And that's who we're talking to today. And at this Brandma's house, you'll get a good helping of PB and Slay is what you'll get. And we're going to talk about going from barbecue to branding. Seems unrelated, but it's an amazing story hear from Phyllis. Phyllis, welcome. So glad you're here.
And thank you, sweetheart.
And thank you for being a part of this conversation.
I'm excited. I don't think we've ever had a one-on-one conversation, so this should be really good.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I know we've been connected for a little bit through different circles that we've been a part of, but we've never had an actual face-to-face, or at least a virtual face-to-face, so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So you're amazing. I love what you're doing. I love what you're doing with your brand and everything. But you didn't start at this place. You've got an amazing story, amazing journey of how you became the Ghetto Country Brandmother. So share a little bit for those that don't know you yet. Share a little bit of that evolution from where you were with barbecue to what you become now.
Oh my goodness. Barbecue has always been my husband's thing. And it started out as a way to get him to do something that he loved. And mind you, my husband was always known as Big Mister. But when he started barbecuing and I started going around the other people, I became Mrs. Mister. And that was my first introduction into a personal brand. But it was fun being hospitable and all that kind of stuff. I love entertaining people or having people over and all that. But when you turn it into a job, it loses some of the love. And plus, I saw my husband and my child 24/7. My daughter's been homeschooled since fourth grade. And working with your spouse takes a special kind of crazy, because you wake up with them, you go to work with them, you sleep with them, you do other things with them. And it was just 24/7. And so it lasted for a good long while. It lasted about 10 years. And then I said, baby, I don't want to play with you no more. I want to stay married, but I don't want to play in this kitchen with you no more. And it was kind of jarring, because the whole time that we were in our business together, I was always pushing him in front of the camera. Whenever there was something to do on television, Neil, go do this. I'll sign the contracts. I'll do the negotiation, but you go do it. And I was constantly pushing him out there. And so when I made the decision to let go of the business with him, it's like, oh, shit, I ain't got nobody to push out here now. I got to do something. And at the time, I was studying to be a master coach. And one of the certifications that I had to get was in branding. And while I had done my version of branding and marketing for our previous business, I did not study branding on any level. And so getting that certification just kind of opened my eyes to like, oh, shit. And I realized the deeper I got, even though we built a multi-million dollar business, it's like I could see how many millions we left on the table with bad branding and marketing. And I don't want to go back and get them, because I don't want to go back into the restaurant industry. But it was that click for me. So finding this whole branding path and then discovering brand strategy on top of that, it's like, oh, I can do the strategy stuff because I am so not creative. Sweetie, you give me a box of crayons and you will have all 52 colors on your thing. Don't play with me. But it was that whole introduction to branding that kind of got me here. I started out that I wanted to get into business coaching, but the more I got into that, I know I'm a people person. I don't like being around a whole lot of people all the time, but I like pouring into people. Mm-hmm. And so finding the strategy side, I started doing brand strategy for businesses. And it's like, but no, let's start with you first. We need to understand you before we build this. And a lot of people, the way that branding was taught to me, it's like we concern ourselves with the audience first before we concern ourselves with what we want. Oh, find out and do your research and then go build it for them. excuse my language, but fuck them. What about what I want? And it took on this twisted perception for me. It's like, this is backwards. If we're doing everything to please the clients, how are we being pleased? I know we're making the money and that's great. But when I see so many people talking about burnout and overwhelm, and I know this is way longer than you expected, is it?
No, this is awesome. This
okay.
is fantastic.
But it was the whole burnout and overwhelm and all of that kind of thing that I see in so many business owners. And it's like, it should not be that way. And I recently was been telling people that one of the how I went from business coach to brand strategist to personal branding, I was having a conversation with Wolf and a couple of other people. And Wolf said, I refer people to Phyllis for personal branding. I'm like, what? I never said I did personal branding. And it was that light bulb moment when I realized, you know what? I'd rather work with people than work on fake entities and personas. Let's work on the person. How about that? And so getting to that point of understanding personal branding and coming up with my own framework and my own understanding of it, and especially looking back, I tried to separate myself from the barbecue for a long time, but I realized that was my introduction into personal branding. And why I approached it the way that I did is when I was Mrs. Mister, that's all anybody knew me as. And so there was this whole identity crisis piece that I had. It's like, when can I not be her? Because if anybody sees me on the street, hey, Mrs. Mister, you got some barbecue? Do I look like I got some freaking barbecue? Oh my God. It's like people see I'm tall. Did you play basketball? I'm 57. Why the hell are you asking me that now? It's that kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And it was the, like I say, it was the identity crisis piece. Cause I would say that, you know what? Neil went to bed with Mrs. Mister more than he went to bed with Phyllis. I took my laptop whenever I went somewhere. I constantly felt like I had to be on as Mrs. Mister because Mrs. Mister was recognized. If people said my name, Phyllis, nobody knew who that was.
Right. Right.
So it was that whole dynamic that I looked back on to like, yeah, no, we're not doing this. Because people are entitled to have a personal life and a private life, and turning your know, like, and trust tactics into, oh, let me show you my toes and toast. My feet are in the sand and I have my avocado toast. That's how I get my, I don't give a shit. And so it's like, you're entitled to keep that stuff to yourself. Yeah. But the world is trying to tell you that, oh, you have to do this all the time because you done went from people pleasing to pleasing algorithms. The only people that are really making money off of these social media platforms are the social media platforms. The ones that they continue to push out are the ones that are making them money. So it's like that algorithm don't have a damn thing to do with me. And people constantly want to blame the algorithm. It's like, sweetie, have you ever thought about your shit just boring? Nobody's checking for you because you're not interesting.
Yeah.
You're not showing your interesting side. You're either trying to be salesy, pitchy, or fun loving. Come on now. It's more to you than that. There's more to you than that.
Oh,
so,
my goodness, Phyllis. You've got so much that you just shared to unwrap. Wow. A lot of head smack moments, a lot of great. Absolutely love it. So is the barbecue business still going? Is that still in existence?
Oh, hell no.
Oh,
when
no,
we
you
moved,
because
we lived in California when we had our restaurants. We had two restaurants and we were about to open a third. And the closer we got to working out that third concept, the more I realized it's like, this is not what I want to do. This is not where I should be. Cooking is my husband's joy. And now owning the restaurants has changed that joy because Neil has always cooked me stuff that he can't make twice because he don't know what he did.
Oh, no, I'm the same way.
See?
I experiment. I throw a little bit of this, a little bit of that, smell it, and throw it in there. And then
there you go.
Says, well,
and then owning
again?
A restaurant
like,
takes all of that away.
Yeah.
Because we got to the point like, Thanksgiving, we were eating cereal and sushi. Don't nobody want to cook.
You just did it all week. He doesn't want to do it.
Yeah. And so we made the decision. When I told Neil I was leaving and I asked him, what did he want to do? He said, I'm rolling with you. He said, we lived my dream for 10 years. Now let's go do yours. Wow, so we said that in June, we put our house on the market as is. We sold that. We closed the restaurant in July. And in August, we moved to Oregon. We stayed there for 3 years, and now we're in Texas. We've been in Texas for 2 years.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Now, has he gotten back his joy for cooking? Is he doing that more?
He has gotten it back. It's like I get breakfast in bed again.
Oh,
shit.
Wow.
I'm doing the thing.
Well, and it's an interesting story of, you know, that sometimes when we follow our passions, if we don't do it right, our passions almost become a burden and they become something you don't like. And so, you know, it is tough to find a way to continue in your passion without it becoming that, you know, with the cooking especially. And I think there's other industries. Not every industry suffers from that. I think there are some industries where you can be pursuing your passion and it makes you come alive. Like it's so core to who you are and what you love that it doesn't become a burden. It doesn't, it doesn't become something that you hate. And so for you, you know, moving out of the barbecue business, you know, for you, the head smack moment was my identity is wrapped up in this and I don't want to do that anymore. Is that right?
It was that, and I felt like the way I describe it is I was drowning in Neil's dream. This was his dream. It wasn't mine. And while I was very supportive in that, and I'm probably the one that kind of pushed him into it, it's like, okay, I thought I would push and I would be able to let go. But in pushing him into it, I got sucked into it. And there were times where I was resentful because I was doing a lot of stuff in the background, but Neil was getting all the praise. I know I pushed him in front of the TV, but damn, do y'all recognize that he's not doing this by himself?
Yeah.
And so there was moments of resentment there. And then it's like, but I don't really want to do this anyway. So why am I mad that I'm not getting the recognition? And so part of what I was doing while we were building the business, I was doing a lot of networking. And the more I networked, the more I started speaking, the more I started visiting high schools and telling kids how to be entrepreneurs, it's like, this is what I want to do. I don't want to do this stuff. I don't want to go back to the kitchen. Can I go home, please? I want to pour into people. I want to lift people up. I want to show people. It's like, sweetie, you're too brilliant to be this basic. Don't do that. And like I said, the more I did that, the more I said, dude, this is not for me. This is not for me.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that as you stepped away from that and started doing this, pouring out into people, you started finding out that that's what I want to do. It was almost a thing on the side, an extra thing.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't really building even the barbecue business, right? It had nothing to do with it. It was just something you were doing because of the success you had in growing to, you know, a $2 million business. And so you started finding your passion through this other thing, which is amazing. And that was probably a light bulb moment, like you said, of saying, wow, this is way more fun than meat and fire, you know. Though I find it hard to believe that there's a whole lot of things better than meat and fire. I'm a fan of it.
Just believe, I still get the meat and fire. We just not sharing it anymore.
And so, you know, so you said you moved into doing a little bit of the business coaching, or, you know, you shared about, you know, you did a hop into business coaching. And so was that something that was a side thing, or was that like an all-in thing?
It started as a side thing because I actually started doing business coaching when we were still in the restaurants. I started getting my certifications then. And at that time, I was doing it for free. But when I put a price tag on it, all of a sudden I got crickets. It's like, what, y'all not checking for me anymore? You have no more questions?
Yeah.
And it changed something. And like I said, it wasn't until I got to that fourth certification, which was in branding, that it's like, oh, okay, I'm not branding. I'm just expecting, it's like, I have this thing, come get it. I have this thing, come get it. And I'm giving away this thing, come get it. Still crickets. And so it was, you know, I'm missing the branding piece. And the more I understood branding, it's like, okay, now I'm missing the marketing piece. Okay, now that I have the marketing, there's the sales part, there's the positioning, there's all these different strategies that have to work together that you have to kind of balance. And one of the things a lot of people miss when they start a business is like, oh, I know how to do this. Let me monetize it. Sweetie, you need to know how to do that. Plus, you need to know how to run a business. And there's so much more than just collecting the money. Right. And if you find anybody who has been in business a couple of years and they're doing okay, sweetie, you need to, instead of asking them how to get more sales, you need to ask them, how do you run a business? Because it's more than a notion to get out here and all this behind the scenes stuff that y'all don't see when you're looking at these cute pictures and videos. This shit is hard.
Right. Yeah, you see the highlight reels. You see all the successes, and you don't realize that running a business is difficult, and entrepreneurship is can be a challenge. You know, and some people don't realize the challenges that are associated with it, and they see the awards, you know, people holding up their awards, or they see the successes, but there's a lot of hustle and grind that becomes a part of it. And so, you know, as you learned about branding strategy, you know, everybody kind of has their own definition of what brand strategy is. How do you define brand strategy?
The easiest way I can say is getting from point A to point B, and point B is always moving. So if you decide that you want to be in the top five of this particular industry, how do you get there? Okay, what does your message have to be? How do you have to put out content? Who are you targeting? And all those things are that. So now you finally made your point B, you can't just sit there. Because if you allow, if you just sit there, then your business is going to start to die. So now you got to find a new point B. It's like, okay, I got to keep getting it. I'm still giving out the same message, but I have to create a new point B. My message has not changed. My positioning has not changed unless my clients have changed, because you may have attracted a different kind of client. You may have been going from mid-level, but you're attracting high-level clients. So now you have to change your message to align with higher paying clients, because it's like, they don't want that basic shit. It's like, that was fine when I came in the door, but now I see that my brand equity has increased, so I'm going to need to charge some more money. And so you are always moving towards that point B, and that point B is never ending. If you think that, oh, I got a lot of customers now, and you stop marketing, sweetie, that you just killed your business. Right. You always have to have people wanting, or, and I'm not talking about FOMO, but you always have to have this line of people who are willing or waiting to come through the door and pay you. It's like, oh, well, I can't take on any more work right now. That's all gravy. I love it. But you better keep marketing, because at some point, all of those jobs are going to be done. Then what are you going to do?
Right. And I think people, there are two times that people stop marketing: when things are going really, really well, and when things are starting to go bad. You know, the first casualty of budget cuts and first casualty of, you know, things aren't as great as they were, is to start cut back on marketing. You know, let's save money on that and just get some more grind, and let's get some more activity, and let's do some more busy work so we feel like we're productive, but let's not do the marketing like we used to. Or like you were saying, is things are super busy and their pipeline is not being filled up. They're just managing what's already in the pipeline, and then suddenly the pipeline is empty and they're like, oh no, you know, we did nothing to fill this pipeline and keep things going. And so I think it is a very relevant thing to consider, is keeping that ongoing building of brands and adjusting and evaluating and evolving and making sure that you're not stuck where you always were, and not moving forward.
And another thing people don't do, most entrepreneurs that I know, very few, if any, have an exit strategy. There are some people that go into a business like, I'm going to build this up to this point and then I want to sell it off. Those are people who are just building a business for the sake of money. But people who have long-term passions and want to have long-term impact, they don't plan for their exit strategy. And it leaves you with this thing that this is going to go on forever. It's like, even if it does, you won't. What's going to happen then? And everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to leave it to my kids. Your kids don't even like you like that. They don't want this.
They have their own dreams and passions.
And unless they are similar to you, they probably don't want it. So then what are you going to do with it? Are you going to ride it till the wheels fall off? Because the thing that I'm noticing, and that's been weighing on me lately, is how much people are not preparing for how this is going to end. And I mean that in a way that you do all of this stuff. All of these people out here trying to have a brand. Everybody wants a brand. It's like, why? If you're just building this up so that you created a job for yourself, so that you never have to work anywhere, why is a brand so important? The thing that you need to do is make sure that your referral system probably needs to be on top. That should be your marketing, because running out here creating content for the sake of creating content when you have no aspirations of growth beyond a business of one, why the hell are you doing all this work? Like you said, it's busy work. And if you know that you now have five people working for you, when you go, what's going to happen to them? Are you going to let them buy the company? Are you going to leave it to, what's going to happen? Because you're now responsible for I don't have a problem being responsible for payroll. I don't have a problem with employing people. I do have a problem with, you know what, I'm not preparing them just like I'm not preparing myself. You haven't given them an exit strategy for when this goes. That's why so many people stay stuck in corporate, because they know corporations aren't going anywhere if they can help it.
Right, right. So talk a little bit about that, building a brand with an exit strategy. What does that look like when you're coaching, when you're helping people build brands?
When I talk about exit strategy, like, I just got a new client. We just started working together. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. But we just started working together. And part of my process is contemplation. That's the very first thing we have to do. Because a lot of people go in this, they think they know, but they never contemplate for themselves what they actually want. So if we're contemplating for you, it's like, this has to be right for you. Fuck what's already out there. I don't care what you heard. I don't care who is the expert in it. Whatever they said, I want you to sit in your shit for a minute and think about what's right for you. Mm-hmm. Is this going to work for you? Because you have a family of five. When they did it, they were a single person living the high life. So does this work for you? And if you still want this, how do you make it work for you? Because if you think about it, you're thinking about answers that already exist. But when you contemplate it, you're trying to find answers that exist for you. It's a different process.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, like with her, excuse me, with her, she already has a company name. I said, are we keeping this? She said, well, it's always been. I didn't say, well, it's always been. I said, are we keeping this? Because if this is the name that we're going, what are we going to do with it when it's over? Is this going to go to your sons? And we talked about her sons and the legacy of that. Okay, if they're going to get it, then how are we going to bring them into the business now? Because if you're going to start this journey with them at some point, sweetie, we got to get them on board now.
Right.
And they have to make sure that you know what, this is going to be a thing for us. But, and I say that because it's based on our name. A lot of people, they take the thing and they name it after themselves. It's hard to sell your name because nobody really wants it. They want your assets, your business assets, like your list, your client list. You can keep the business.
Yeah.
But when you turn that business into a brand, they will buy the brand because the brand is worth way more than the business assets.
Right, right.
So are we keeping the name? And a lot of people don't consider that. Yeah, if we're keeping the name, then how can we sell this off when you're done?
Right. Right.
And is that actual conversation, how are you going to get out of what you got into?
That's amazing. And I think that's the difference between a professional and an amateur, is the questions they ask. And obviously, mm-hmm. you know what you're doing. You're asking the right questions, and they're really having to think about that, because they don't go into it with that contemplation, with that long-term vision. You know, I want to call it after myself. I want to call the business after my name. Well, what about if you decide to sell it or somebody buys it? Do you want your name possibly associated with somebody that might not do as well as you did, you know? And so, you know, keep that in mind and consider that, is, like you were saying, is that name something you want to hold on to? Or is it, or do you need to come up with a name that you're fine? It's unrelated to you. It's unrelated to any kind of a legacy, any kind of family association. And that way you can sell it off. And it's not something that you feel bad that suddenly, okay, the name that I had, they're not doing it the way I did it, or they're doing stuff that I would not have done, but yet it's my name still out there. And anytime I say my name, people are associated with that thing.
Mm-hmm. I know this was a while ago. There was a woman who had built her business up, and her name was attached to it. It's that very thing you're talking about. Someone came along and offered her a whole shit ton of money that she just could not see any reason to turn down. And so when they bought it, they bought her name. She went back and thought she was going to be able to use her name again. They were like, no, sweetie, cease and desist.
With your own name, huh? Right.
With your own name.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
With your own name. And so, and this is the thing. It's like, if you're, the thing about, like, when people get into the whole trademark thing, you don't have to trademark everything. But if there's something that someone can go out and make money off of using your name in some shape, form, or fashion, then that's what you trademark. I would never trademark Phyllis Williams Strotter. But what is trademarked is Ghetto Country Grandmother. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying there aren't other grandmothers out there. I know there. When I was getting my trademark, there was someone getting a trademark as the Fairy Grandmother. Yeah, Fairy Grandmother.
Oh, wow.
And I got a cease and desist letter from someone who was known as the grandmother before me. Mm-hmm. But her thing was, she wasn't even using it.
Yeah.
But she had a trademark. So when she sent me that cease and desist, they said, no, you don't even use that. So they let me have it. And they let the Fairy Grandmother have hers. Mm. But our approaches and everything is different. She was more PR. Fairy Grandmother, she's more visual. Sweetie, I'm all about the people. I'm about scaling businesses. I don't talk about growing seven-figure business, but sweetie, I want you to have $1 million business, because $1 million ain't shit these days. That's the least you should have.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not going to promise you no seven-figure dream, because, sweetie, if you don't do the work, you're not going to have it, and you can't blame me for that.
Right, right. So we're talking about your name. So, you went into the business coaching, and so you hopped into the barbecue, then you skipped into the personal.
Got dropped into it.
And then you kind of jumped into the personal branding. At what point did you become the Ghetto Country Brand Mother from all of the things that you kind of, those different moments of transition?
I tried to hold on to my old name, because the old name of my business was CKO Creator. And that stemmed from, like I said, when I was talking to kids, I started coaching homeschool kids on how to build businesses. I created a 12-week program for that. And so back then, CKO stood for Chief Kid Officer, which is how I raised my daughter within our business. And she was the original CKO. But when I started getting into working with more adults, I'm like, CKO doesn't fit anymore. And it's like, how am I? So I started saying CKO stands for character, kinship, and originality. That's how I was trying to make it fit. And so I had stepped into the role of Ghetto Country Grandmother, because I would tell people I'm Ghetto Country. I was raised hood adjacent by a country mama. That's me. Yeah. This is what you see is what you get. And so then when I started being the Ghetto Country Grandmother and trying to talk about CKO Creator, that it wasn't lining up. It was not going together. I did not promote CKO. I did not endorse CKO, because everything that went with CKO had nothing to do with this now, even though I was trying to flip it. Yeah, flipping the script did not work. And I understand why people was like, well, I already have the name. Sweetie, let it go. Mm-hmm. Let it go. If it's not making you no money, let it go.
Yeah.
And so letting that go, and it's like, okay, where's Ghetto Country going to go? She's going to go to Grandma's house. And it became this whole kind of, for me at first, it was this whole like Little Red Riding Hood story. It's like, ooh, I'm the Ghetto Country Grandmother. And so there was that kind of vibe to it. But it never lost this thing about being that nurturing individual. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they think nurturing has to be cuddly, soft, and sweet. Bitch, I'm here for the violence. No, we're not playing that game today.
PB and Slay, right?
PB and Slay, that's it. But this is what I talk about scaling from a personal brand. So Ghetto Country Grandmother actually came before Grandma's House. Mm-hmm. And then Grandma's House ended up creating a process that I now call, like I said, PB and Slay. This is your personal brand and Slay, so that you can go out here and do what you need to do so that you can fully endorse your business. This is to get you out of the process, because every time you look up in ChatGPT or Bard or Gemini, whatever they're called, these AI prompts, they're always telling you part of your marketing is to hire an influencer. Baby, if you can't influence on your own shit, why are you paying somebody else to do it? You need to build your own audience and your own community, because paying them is limited. You're going to have to keep paying them. Instead of taking money to pay them, how about you endorse and building your own personal brand, that you become an influencer of your own thing, which by definition turns out to make you an influencer within the industry.
Yeah.
And even though that's not your purpose of starting your business, it's a byproduct of it. And if you don't know how to be influential, then sweetie, nobody's checking for you. Mm. When you say, oh, I want to be a speaker, nobody's checking for you because you're not influential enough.
Yeah.
They don't care.
Yeah. So do you feel that when you transitioned and when you kind of owned that name, that that was a major jump in kind of your personal brand?
It really was. Yeah. It really was, because I tell people I'm more courageous than I am confident. But once I stepped into Grandma's House, the confidence of what I was doing changed. Yeah. Because it's like now it clarified some things for me, because I was trying to make my process fit into my old business model. It was not doing that.
Yeah.
So once I was able to say, you know what, this is Grandma's House over here, and this house, this is what we do. I got a house on YouTube. I got a house on Instagram and all these type of things. So how I talk about what I do is from a mothering standpoint. I'm not your mama, but I'm the mother of business. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are different ways that you can approach this, because one of the things that I plan to do is at some point I want to grow Grandma's House to the point of licensing out to other brand parents. So now if you're a brand parent, sweetie, you might be the soccer mom, a soccer grandma or whatever, because you're that type of mom. I'm going to drive you everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. Or you can be that, you know what, I'm that I'm not that, that what's the, I'm, well, I'm a daddy's girl. So while you may be a grandparent, you may have that, that daddy girl vibe, dad spirit on you, where yeah. you want to uplift women in a good way, not in a lecherous way, but in a good way. So you're that type of grandparent. So the style of the grandparent gets to change. But the working model does not. We're still trying to get you to a point where we nurture you. We're still trying to get to a point where we can stay one-on-one. We're not trying to have 50 million people. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to make sure that we're very well compensated. We only take on 10 clients at a time. But our approach to using this process, I'm a soccer mom. I'm a girl dad. I'm a this. This is the type of parenting that I do. Because I'm that nurturing, empathic person. I'm an empathic bitch because I know when I have to cut stuff off. You may be this empathic something else, but your empathy doesn't go nearly as deep as mine. Because people need a person. Like, we always talk about representation, but we all need some type of nurturing. And there's not enough nurturing in business. There's too much cutthroat in it. Yeah. I tell people, I don't look at, like we were told to do competitive analysis. I ain't got no competition. There are alternatives to me, but I'm not competing with you because I don't want who you have because they cannot handle me.
Yeah.
No babies are soft. My baby's got to come in. It's like, all right, grandma, let's do some shit. I need a different level of client than you do. So I'm not in competition with you.
Right. And with that nurturing comes honesty, right? I mean, that's the whole brand. And I love what you said earlier, you know, because I believe that with identity, once you understand identity, you have clarity as well.
Yes.
Because once you have that identity, it lets you know what you do, what you don't do. Once you know who you are, you know what you're going to do. And so I think when you started leaning into being the country ghetto grandmother, that you immediately knew you had clarity of what you did and what you were about and your brand personality, the boldness of it. You know, it's quite an ambitious and a big name, you know, that you leaned into, and it immediately gave you a personality that you've then played out in your copy on your website. You've played out in your marketing and anything that you've put out there. It's been because you had your identity clarified. And I think, you know, with some of the work that you had mentioned you do with clients, is the contemplation and the brand strategy and understanding who you are and what you're about. As soon as you have your identity, then you have clarity on what you do. And I love that you've done that. And you've also talked about, you know, working with people's stories and sharing some of their stories. And you mentioned about, you know, sharing about your struggle. And that's not always the only thing to share about. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
There's a difference in sharing your story and trauma dumping. And one of the things I got from Mark Gutman a while ago is, like, you share the wounds, you don't share. How do you put it? You share the scars, but you don't share the wound. I think that's how he put it.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're still healing from something, those should not be the stories that you share. That's just you trauma dumping, trying to go through some stuff and trying to work it out. And I get it. You want to work some things out. I am very transparent in how I tell my stories. So it's like, but the story has to be relevant. Mm-hmm. I was talking when we were on the air meet yesterday, and I was talking to Anna Lee, and I know Anna Lee takes a bit of offense when I say branding is a pimp game. But I said, but the other part was, and Chris saw when I posted this, I said, but people, a lot of people don't know, my dad used to be a pimp. He wasn't a pimp for a long time, but he was a pimp. And so riding to my father would drop me off at junior high school in the hood out of a limo with the holes in the car. And there was that was a part of my life. And so I understand that game to a certain level. And I respect anybody who works in it willingly. Not trafficked, but if you work in that willingly, sweetie, if that's how you make your money, I got mad respect for you. At least you know yourself well enough to know that that's what you want to do. Being forced into it, no, I'm not down for that. If we need to fight about it, sweetie, let's go kick somebody's ass and get you out. That's me. But it's understanding that whether you're on the streets or whether you're in a penthouse or you're in a C-suite, the game of business is still being played the same way if you know how to play it. If you know how to make the right connections, if you know how to do the right collaborations, if you know how to sweet talk your way into that deal that you want, it's all a game. And so how you play the game should be on your terms. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are afraid to do it on their terms. Well, you know what? I hate, and this is me, I don't care about nobody else. I hate when people talk about being triggering. I'm a walking trigger.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to censor myself because you're too sensitive. Now, what I will do is I'll remove myself from the space. I don't go in spaces where I know I'm going to be offensive. It's because I'm not being offensive intentionally. It's that you're offended. So let me take my ass over here and sit down and don't invite me. I'm okay. Go have your fun.
Right.
So right. If you're triggered, sweetie, I'm not the person to be around because right. I'm not playing the filtering game. Right. I'm not trying to be intentionally offensive. I'm not trying to be intentionally hurtful. I am respectfully rebellious. Over here in my house, I'm going to talk all the shit I want to.
Yeah.
In your house, I'm a tone it down because this is your house.
Right. And that's a clarity that comes from identity. Like you know who you are. You're fine with it. That is, you know, people know what to expect and what not to expect because you've just added that clarity as a brand. And I think that's powerful. So, you know, when you talk about brand and, you know, branding being an asset, you know, personal branding, you've said, is game changing.
Yes.
How have you seen a game changing? Obviously, it's been a game changer for you as you've adopted that identity and leaned 100% into it. How have you seen it changing for other people as well when they've, you know, they've got the asset of a brand, but the personal brand side of things?
When you get to a point of using it as an asset, you can separate yourself from it. And this is when it comes into not taking personal branding personally. Because if you tie yourself too closely to the brand, then it's stuff that people say, especially when the trolls come out and the haters come out and all that kind of stuff. So you're taking that stuff personally. And as emotional as I can get, I had to separate myself from that because my feelings used to get hurt real easy. Y'all would not believe it, but I used to be a big ass crybaby. I'm still a big ass crybaby, but I know I treat it as an emotional thing, not a personal thing. And like even one of my other new clients, I started with her last month. One of the things that we discovered during her contemplation process was that she's fine when she's stressed, but she does not work well under pressure. And so now we're like, okay, now how do we bring this into the brand? So one of the things that you're going to have to teach people as you put out your content, it's like, you know what? Don't pressure me. I may be stressed the fuck out. I work well with this, but don't pressure me.
Yeah.
And so now one of your pillars of content might be, you know what? How do you deal with stress when you're doing something? Because of the type of business that she's doing. It's like, if you're doing workshops, then how do you deal with stress? Do not allow yourself to be pressured because pressure is what weighs on you. And the reason she figured this out, because she told me about the event that she did. And within that event, when she got there, she had all her stuff prepared. And then she got there and the promoters or whoever, they flipped the script on her.
Oh, wow.
So she was totally unprepared for how they flipped the script. That was pressure. I'm sitting here on this panel of experts and now I have to be on. You know, you have to give that energy.
Yeah.
But I can't fully give into that because this is too much pressure. I don't know how to do this because I wasn't prepared. And for people who know that they have to be prepared for situations that they do not adapt quickly, then this is not the thing for you. So you start making sure that this is part of your personal brand and your content that people understand. Don't come at me with this. If you ask me to do something, then stick to that thing. And so you're able to make sure that people understand how you work. So when you come in my door, and we're doing this work, don't be surprised. One of the reasons why, because usually if I write something, normally I don't write profanity on purpose. It is very seldom. But because I'm writing as a ghetto country grandmother, I have to read back through I need to put a shit there or a damn or something. Because it might not be there. Because I don't want someone reading my stuff. It's like, you didn't write this. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Because I get just a tad bit more cerebral when I'm writing than when I'm speaking. When I'm speaking, sweetie, if I'm comfortable, let's have a conversation. Let's be real.
Yeah.
And it's getting to that point of being genuine. And there's a difference in being real and keeping it real. Keeping it real, people are kind of hateful. They. But being real and being genuine, sweetie, how do you do that within your personal brand? I'm so sick of you talking about being authentic. The authentic part is for you. The genuine part is for your audience.
That's how
you come across. That's how you relate. Good.
Say that one more.
So it's like, let it go. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, say that again for the people in the back. That was awesome.
The authentic part is for you. The genuine part is for your audience. You don't have to tell anybody you're authentic. If you feel like you have to announce it every time, then sweetie, that's just some fake ass shit that you feel like you need to say.
Right.
You know what? Your authenticity, trust and believe. Ghetto Country Grandmother is probably only about 10% of me.
Yeah.
That's about as much as I'm willing to give because I also believe in boundaries. And so I think I put in the post yesterday. I'm like, if you decide to follow Phyllis follow the Ghetto Country Grandmother into Phyllis' world, you might fuck around and find out. This is not the place to be.
Oh my goodness. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And there is a difference. And I think, you know, it's a valid conversation too about the idea of an alter ego, a personality that celebrities do this, sports figures do this. There's a book written about the alter ego where there is a persona that you could put on that is crowd facing.
True to you.
Facing, yeah. And being okay with that, you know, and it's not your authentic self. It's what you're doing to present
your
message, what you're doing, what you're about. But then also understanding that that is an alter ego, that is a personality. And, you know, people be authentic. Well, nobody really cares about authentic. You know, they're like, do you solve the problem you've promised to solve? You know, I don't care if authentically you've had a bad day. I don't care if authentically you're sad or authentically whatever. Like, are you going to solve the problem that you promised you would solve as a brand? And so I don't care about authenticity, but I also like your personality. And I know that your personality and your brand and your alter ego is attractive to me. And I want to be a part of that. I want to be working with somebody that has that as their brand. And so I think that's super value. And what you just said is, you know, the Ghetto Country Grandmother is 10% of Phyllis. You know, it's not all of you. You're not always on, you know, as that character, you know, as that personality, as that brand, that there is another side of you. But and that's the real you. And when people get to know you, they see that there's a different side of you as well.
Yeah, because I have something that I do on occasion. I cannot do a paid community. I can't even do a free community. That's not how I work. I need feedback. I need to look you in the eye and all of that. So one of the things that I do is I have grandma's house parties. And that's where it's like the cameras, we're on Zoom. Everybody go get your drink. Whatever's going to get you buzzed tonight, whether it's your weed or your liquor or your coffee, whatever you got, we're going to come back here and we're going to have a real conversation. And so that's still another level up from just being the Ghetto Country Grandmother. That's probably the only place where I actually overlap. Because now you see my husband coming through the door, bringing me some food. He done brought me my cigar or something like that. My daughter's coming in. She coming to camera. And her and Ebony are posing with each other. Because this is, if you're back here with me, you're now what I consider my fam. Right. And this is where you get to see a bit more of my life. And we actually get to have a conversation versus me trying to put out content into a community so I can just feed you. Sweetie, I got to be fed too.
Yeah.
And that feeding comes from, you know what, let's talk. I love a good conversation. Tell me some good shit. And don't tell me the boring stuff about how the weather is in London or no. We're going to have some real conversations. It's like, So yeah, that's how I stay connected. And with past clients, with potential clients, they come to grandma's house parties.
Yeah, that is awesome. And that's when they get the Ghetto Country Grandmother in grandma's house, and that's when you're on. But they're not going to expect that to be you all the time. And so I think owning that as a brand, I think people sometimes with what they see on social media, I think it's a misunderstanding of what building a personal brand is and what sometimes leading a community or leading, you know, even from the stage, you know, because when I go on stage, it's a different version of me than when I'm not on stage, when I'm with my family, when I'm just like, I can hide in a corner and be totally fine with it, you know, in a crowded room, you know, but when I'm on stage, I know I have to be a person, a certain kind of person to deliver what people are there to hear. And so understanding that there is those variations and that you can separate those, I think is also a revelation for people because they, like, I'm not the outgoing person, you know, I can't, you know, do that. But it's like, but you don't have to be that all the time. There are some people that are that all the time. Like you see them on stage, off stage, at Walmart, at wherever, they're always that person. But then there's other people that, no, they zoom up their energy to do what they need to do. And then they just zoop, come yeah. back out of that. And do you feel that's yeah. what you're like with, you know, the difference between
CCB, Phyllis?
Yeah.
And the other part is that making that separation is like, because sometimes Phyllis don't want to do shit, but there's stuff that grandma got to do. So you know what?
Right.
I will, to get into that mode, believe it or not, grabbing my earrings and putting my earrings is the start of me getting into that mode. Because I don't wear right. earrings around the house. I don't right. walk around with my phone in my hand and all that kind of stuff. So I get my earrings, my hats are behind me. Which hat am I wearing today? Wait, let me see what I'm wearing. Get my hat, and I have to get in that mindset.
Right.
This is work. And it's like when I tell, I wrote about, you know, how you shake your moneymaker. GCB is how I shake my moneymaker.
Right.
So you know what? This is about money for me. And yeah. so I can't take that personally, because money between friends and family and all this stuff, you know, that gets real raggedy.
Right.
But when we're talking about how am I going to make my money, I make my money with GCB.
Yeah.
But she is not everything. Right. She is not all the things.
It's, yeah. I love where this conversation is going.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, you just have to have a time to turn it off.
Right. Right. And I love that we've gone here, because you know, and you kind of mentioned when you put on the earrings, you know, I think that having those rituals, you know, basically like Clark Kent becoming Superman, like having a ritual, you know, this phone booth, that was his transitional moment of, mm-hmm. okay, I'm Clark Kent most of the time, but now I'm stepping into the phone booth and I'm doing what I need to do. And I think it's such a valid conversation, especially with what you do with personal branding, and what sometimes people feel when it comes to their personal brand is, I've got to capture everything and I've always got to be on. And, you know, it's not all about that. And so, you know, when somebody comes to you, what's some of the things that you do that kind of help them in that process of discovering their personal brand? You know, you discover that, you know, you love this persona, the brand that you've created. How do you help somebody else get into that place?
It's about narrowing down the DNA code. And code stands for contemplation, objectives, dedication, and ethics. So if we're going to start with the contemplation portion, that is the biggest part of the process, because this is an ongoing process, because what you mm-hmm. contemplate today will not be the same thing you contemplate tomorrow or a week from now. So you're always able to step back into that. But when we start with the contemplation, it's like, what do you want in your life, brand, and business? Because this is about connecting the dots. Because what I learned was that my personal brand interfered too much with my personal life back in the day. So if you don't realize that your personal brand is going to have an impact on your life, you're fooling yourself. If you don't think that your business is going to have an effect on your brand, you're fooling yourself. All three are connected. It's all your life. But then what am I going to do? How am I contemplating this is going to work out for myself? If I'm saying I want this, this, and this, then I got to make sure these bitches are lined up, because this is how I want to live my life. This is how I want to put out my brand. And this is how I'm going to make my money. And so making sure that part of the process of contemplation is done. So now we're going to take what you contemplated for yourself, and we're going to narrow it down a little bit into objectives. It's like, how can we turn this into objectives for what we want for our life, brand, and business? And so once we get this, like, it's no different than a funnel. We're going to do this thing. We got down to the objectives of how we're going to do this. We're not talking about goals. We're talking about objectives. Goals have end dates and metrics and all this stuff. Objectives, they could be forever. If I decide that I want to stay on the top five list for the rest of my life, that's an objective. You can never make that end. So if we narrow it down to the objectives, we'll get to the goals later, but here's the objectives. Okay, now based on these objectives that you have, let's narrow it down a little further. Which one of these can you stay dedicated to? Because there's a difference between dedication and commitment. I'm committed to my husband on paper. I'm dedicated to him in my heart. Dedication is as easy as breathing. So if we're going to dedicate ourselves to something, it's like, okay, based on these objectives, that's an objective, but I ain't going to do that shit. I already know that. I'm going to give up after a certain amount of time. I'll be committed to it for a while, but it's not going to last. So let's just focus on the stuff you can stay dedicated to. Okay, now we're going to go further down the funnel. How are we going to make sure that you stay ethical in all your shit? Because we see too many people getting caught with their pants down. If you know that you're going to smoke weed on occasion, don't let somebody make you feel bad for it. Go ahead and be ethical about it. Yes, I smoke weed. You got a problem with it? Don't hire me.
Yeah.
That's it. So you break that down. This becomes your code. So this becomes part of your core message and part of the pillars that you build your brand on. And then we take it on over into how we set up camp. Camp is our camp is communication, audience, am I saying it right? Communication, audience, marketing, and positioning. And where a lot of this starts to take hold is when we get to the positioning part. That's why I've been working so hard on the positioning. And the thing that I talked to Chris about, so now I'm actually writing a book on positioning your personal brand. But it's, we're taking all that because we want to position your personal brand. So one, it's aligned with your business brand. Because your personal brand, if all you're doing with your personal brand is trying to get, I'm an authority. Sweetie, save it for your mama. positioning your personal brand is different than positioning a brand, because the brand over here, the business brand, we talk about product, we talk about placement, we talk about promotion, all of those P's. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about positioning a personal brand, we're talking about barriers, broadcasting, and bridging. Mm-hmm. So the barriers that you create are the barriers between you and the alternatives to you. How are you going to build barriers, which is totally different than boundaries? You can't cross over here and fuck with me over here, but we're going to build barriers. I'm building barriers between me and them. They can't do what I do, and I can't do what they do. So now there's barriers. Then we're going to broadcast. How are we going to get this message out here? Because we already said what our message was. Yeah. But when we're marketing, how are we going to get it out there? We got to broadcast something. But we're constantly broadcasting that we're endorsing the business, because I don't want you to look at me as the business. Bitch, I got shit to do. That has nothing to do with my business. So then I'm going to have to make sure that I'm broadcasting the right message so that you don't think that I'm the one and only employee and I'm the only one that can get it done.
Yeah.
And then yeah. you're going to go from broadcasting to building, because you're building bridges. The bridges are the way that you connect with your audience. That's when that genuine part comes in.
Yeah.
You already had this whole DNA code, but you know what? You got to find a way to be okay with this. Because you are still going to get the haters. You are going to get people that don't like you. Why do you have to cuss so much? Bitch, because I want to. Don't listen.
Yeah.
People rather hate on you than just scroll on past. So.
Right. They feel they've got to stop and comment, you know, and it's like, you know, you can totally keep scrolling. There's nothing. You did not have to stop.
But where's the fun in that? You won't know my opinion if I don't tell you that you're wrong.
Yeah.
But it's about positioning your brand, because like I say, the alignment of how you are with your business brand, you should, the for me, your personal brand is your parent brand. It's the endorser brand. Mm-hmm. So if you understand brand architecture, then you know all of these other things are going to endorse the business brand.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to endorse Phyllis. Phyllis don't want to do all this work. Why do you think I'm talking about licensing out my shit?
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to make sure that you're driving people to the business. Don't drive them to you. I'm an expert at something, but you may not always get me. So you know what? Let's go into grandma's house.
Right.
That's what you're constantly endorsing. That's what you're being influential about. Your influence and influential behavior, I'll put it that way, is what gets you the speaking gigs, is what gets you, like, somebody may come along and ask you to write a book. That's because you're influential. That's because they can count on you to draw in an audience. That's what all of that is. And that's for you. But you should constantly be endorsing the business brand, because that's where you make your money. That's where everybody's going to be paying. It goes into that business account. It ain't going into your pocket.
Yeah.
Your business account is what pays you. That's where your income comes from. But over here, this is generating revenue. So if you're going to be a business of one, why the fuck do you even give a fat rat's ass about branding? Sweetie, yeah. You're a business of one.
My goodness,
it's not that deep for you.
This has been amazing. This has really been good. A lot of great. I mean, if your face is not swelled up from all the head smacking that Phyllis has just done, this has really been great. I've really enjoyed this, and I appreciate your time. And you know, I'd love to have you on again. I think there's so much value you can provide. A great story and great wisdom in, you know, your experience in not only building businesses, but helping others in define their personal brand. What's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
You can follow me on LinkedIn, Phyllis Williams Strotter, or you can say linkedin.com/Bramma. I think I actually put Bramma on that one. you can also follow me on Instagram. I don't do a whole lot of shit on Instagram right now, but I will be. There's the Bramma's House podcast, which is going on hiatus. I'm recording my last episode today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's coming back different. I will tell that. I don't want to take up a whole lot of your time, but I'll tell you about it later. We can talk about it off camera. But that's coming back in a couple of months. But I am going to be doing some LinkedIn Lives on Ask Me Anything on personal branding. So that's coming up in a month or two while I work on this book. So
awesome. And then your LinkedIn, first book is available on your website?
Yes. If you want the download version, all my books are available on my website. If you want the paperback version, you can get them on Amazon. Branding Boundaries and Bullshit. That's the most recent one.
That's awesome. Well, this has been fantastic. Have really enjoyed this. So glad we connected and were able to do this. And if you've enjoyed it, please be sure to follow Phyllis and stop by her website, check out her content on there, listen to other podcasts she's been on, just amazing value. Purchase her book, download her book, join any community that she's a part of. And thank you so much for being a part of this. If you liked it, be sure to share it. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate it and leave a review. We'd love your feedback. And thank you so much, Phyllis. You have an amazing day. And I believe that if one good idea that you take good execution and action on can change everything. And Phyllis has shown that and proved that. And that's why I'm doing this podcast, because I believe if we can just find that one idea and then just take action on it, it'll truly change our lives. So thank you very much, Phyllis, and you have an amazing day.
You too, sweetheart.
Thank you for joining us on the Head Smack Podcast. We've shared some candid stories and life-changing ideas, and now it's your time to act. First, take bold action on just one idea and see how your life can radically change. Secondly, whatever platform you're listening to this on, please rate it, share it, and leave a comment. Let us know where this episode impacted you. I appreciate you giving me your time, and don't forget to join us for our next Misfit Conversation.